Tales from the Jazz Age by F. Scott Fitzgerald. May Day. Chapter 2. Fifth Avenue and 44th Street swarmed with the noon crowd. The wealthy, happy sun glittered in transient gold through the thick windows of the smart shops, lighting upon mesh bags and purses and strings of pearls in gray velvet cases, upon gaudy feather fans of many colors, upon the laces and silks of expensive dresses, upon the bad paintings and the fine period furniture in the elaborate showrooms of interior decorators. Working girls, in pairs and groups and swarms, loitered by these windows, choosing their future boudoirs from some resplendent display, which included even a man's silk pajamas laid domestically across the bed. They stood in front of the jewelry stores and picked out their engagement rings and their wedding rings and their platinum wrist watches, and then drifted on to inspect the feather fans and opera cloaks, meanwhile digesting the sandwiches and sundaes they had eaten for lunch. All through the crowd were men in uniform, sailors from the great fleet anchored in the Hudson, soldiers with divisional insignia from Massachusetts to California, wanting fearfully to be noticed, and finding the great city thoroughly fed up with soldiers, unless they were nicely massed into pretty formations and uncomfortable under the weight of a pack and rifle. Through this medley, Dean and Gordon wandered, the former interested, made alert by the display of humanity at its frothiest and gaudiest, the latter reminded of how often he had been one of the crowd, tired, casually fed, overworked, and dissipated. To Dean, the struggle was significant, young, cheerful. To Gordon, it was dismal, meaningless, endless. In the Yale Club, they met a group of their former classmates who greeted the visiting dean vociferously. Sitting in a semicircle of lounges and great chairs, they had a highball all around. Gordon found the conversation tiresome and interminable. They lunched together, en masse, warmed with liquor as the afternoon began. They were all going to the Gamma Psi dance that night. It promised to be the best party since the war.
"Edith Braden's coming," said someone to Gordon. "Didn't she used to be an old flame of yours? Aren't you both from Harrisburg?"
"Yes," he tried to change the subject.
"I see her brother occasionally. He's sort of a socialistic nut, runs a paper or something here in New York."
"Not like his gay sister, eh?" continued his eager informant. "Well, she's coming tonight, with a junior named Peter Himmel."
Gordon was to meet Jewel Hudson at 8 o'clock. He had promised to have some money for her. Several times he glanced nervously at his wristwatch. At 4, to his relief, Dean rose and announced that he was going over to Rivers Brothers to buy some collars and ties. But as they left the club, another of the party joined them, to Gordon's great dismay. Dean was in a jovial mood now, happy, expectant of the evening's party, faintly hilarious. Over in Rivers, he chose a dozen neckties, selecting each one after long consultations with the other man. Did he think narrow ties were coming back? And wasn't it a shame that Rivers couldn't get any more Welsh markets and collars? There never was a collar like the Covington. Gordon was in something of a panic. He wanted the money immediately, and he was now inspired also with a vague idea of attending the Gamma Psi dance. He wanted to see Edith. Edith, whom he hadn't met since one romantic night at the Harrisburg Country Club, just before he went to France. The affair had died, drowned in the turmoil of the war and quite forgotten in the arabesque of these 3 months. But a picture of her, poignant, debonair, immersed in her own inconsequential chatter, recurred to him unexpectedly, and brought 100 memories with it. It was Edith's face that he had cherished through college with a sort of detached yet affectionate admiration. He had loved to draw her. Around his room had been a dozen sketches of her, playing golf, swimming. He could draw her pert, arresting profile with his eyes shut. They left Rivers at 5:30 and parked for a moment on the sidewalk.
"Well," said Dean genially, "I'm all set now. Think I'll go back to the hotel and get a shave, haircut, and massage."
"Good enough," said the other man. "I think I'll join you."
Gordon wondered if he was to be beaten after all. With difficulty, he restrained himself from turning to the man and snarling out,
"Go on away, damn you!"
In despair, he suspected that perhaps Dean had spoken to him, was keeping him along in order to avoid a dispute about the money. They went into the Biltmore. A Biltmore alive with girls, mostly from the West and South, the stellar debutantes of many cities gathered for the dance of a famous fraternity of a famous university. But to Gordon, they were faces in a dream. He gathered together his forces for a last appeal, was about to come out with he knew not what, when Dean suddenly excused himself to the other man and, taking Gordon's arm, led him aside. "Gordy," he said quickly, "I've thought the whole thing over carefully, and I've decided that I can't lend you that money. I'd like to oblige you, but I don't feel I ought to. It had put a crimp in me for a month." Gordon, watching him dully, wondered why he had never before noticed how much those upper teeth projected. "I'm mighty sorry, Gordon," continued Dean, "but that's the way it is." He took out his wallet and deliberately counted out $75 in bills. "Here," he said, holding them out. "Here's 75. That makes 80 altogether. That's all the actual cash I have with me, besides what I'll actually spend on the trip." Gordon raised his clenched hand automatically, opened it as though it were a tongs he was holding, and clenched it again on the money. "I'll see you at the dance," continued Dean. "I've got to get along to the barber shop." "So long," said Gordon in a strained and husky voice. "So long." Dean began to smile, but seemed to change his mind. He nodded briskly and disappeared. But Gordon stood there, his handsome face awry with distress, the roll of bills clenched tightly in his hand. Then, blinded by sudden tears, he stumbled clumsily down the Biltmore steps. The end of Chapter 2 of Mayday from Tales from the Jazz Age by F. Scott Fitzgerald. Read by Rick Kistner for Lit2Go on the web at fcit.usf.edu.